It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
You're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast here, and one of my old friends, he's not old, but we've known each other for a long time, and when I first started out in radio, and that is Alan Vicks joining me. Alan, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Dave, I'm glad you clarified the old part there. I am slightly older than you are. We have been friends a long time. Man, congratulations on a new podcast. What is this, episode number 5 or 6 we're into now? Congratulations, man. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. I knew you'd always be a radio star. I didn't know it would be a sports podcast. You're a star is what you are.
That's right, in my own mind, a legend in my own mind. I wanted to have you on because I know a lot of people listening and loving East Carolina. I think it's a great thing to have a new sport. It's kind of exciting and trailblazing is to have women's lacrosse. I know you did the PA, and I just want to get your take. I didn't get a chance to make it out, unfortunately, to the games this year. I wanted to try to make it out there, and I wanted to find out about what was your take. You had more of an inside scoop than I did.
Well, this year, obviously being the first year for lacrosse, was a learning experience for everybody. Amanda Barnes is the coach. She's a sharp lady in the process of building a program. It's all about recruiting. Most of the players this year were freshmen, so it was a bit of a struggle, or is a bit of a struggle at times, but they've been competitive. They won a game earlier this year, so I think the future is bright. It's going to take her, 3 or 4 years to really build a program and put her brand on it, but ECU having lacrosse is cool. The crowds have been really good. It's a really neat sport. It's a sport I didn't know a lot about coming in, but it's been very, very neat to watch it grow. And I think 4 or 5 years from now, ECU women's lacrosse is going to be a force, certainly in the American, because the American will be sponsoring the sport starting next year. So it's going to be pretty cool. The crowds are, there's a lot of action. There's never a dull moment in lacrosse, and it has been really neat to watch it and learn more about it. And I think ECU is going to be good in women's lacrosse for a long time to come.
I was very excited because, as you know, you have a daughter, Kendall, and I have a daughter, Mackenzie. And I felt like when I see that, my daughter now is being 4 years old. I was going to say 3. She just had a birthday recently, but she loves sports, and I want her to, she already is talking about, she wants to come here to school like Alexander, like her daddy did. And it's just interesting to see, regardless if she goes here at East Carolina, which I'd love for her to go, wherever she goes, I'd love for her to be able to play a sport if she chooses and have the same opportunities as the two sons I have.
Well, my daughter's 13. She plays softball at the Oakwood School, and she has to play. She's 14. That's right. She just turned 14 back a couple of months ago. My daughter Kendall is 14. She plays softball. She played basketball. She ran, cross country earlier. She's not doing that now. So she got her mom's looks and athletic ability. Thank goodness. So we have an athlete in the family, but that's pretty cool. She's doing well.
Well, I know that's something I thought about when a lot of people were critical, I think, of the lacrosse program, but I thought it was outstanding because even though maybe the sports don't make money, non-revenue, doesn't mean that they're not important. And I think that's something I've always been more than an East Carolina football fan. I haven't gone to the games or the matches or different things of the different sports, but if it's tiddlywinks, I'm going to be pulling for East Carolina.
Absolutely. Purple and gold. Lacrosse is really, taken off in a lot of parts of the country. It's big time. You go places like Duke, places like Maryland, Syracuse, they've had lacrosse programs that have won national championships and got national publicity for a long time.
Exactly. If you look at the Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina area, those three states, the people listening across the world, those three particular states are huge with lacrosse. And I'm hoping that I'm the kind of guy I want to add and not subtract when it comes to sports. And I hope that we don't subtract sports like some folks want to do.
Well, in non-revenue sports, like you said, are very important. We know football drives a train, but you'd be amazed at the crowds. The first lacrosse game we had, it was cold and rainy, and there were almost 1,000 people there. Wow. So there is really a lot of interest in the sport. A lot of people are seeing it now, watching it on TV, like I used to see it on TV and not stop. Now I stop when I see it on TV because I recognize some of the terminology and the plays and the players and things like that. So lacrosse, I think, is here to stay for East Carolina. And Amanda Barnes, even though it's going to be a struggle for a couple of years until she gets all of her parts and pieces in place, I think she's going to do a really good job here.
When I've heard the interviews with her on the radio, I've been very impressed with her. And I know I hate the term, we were talking about the off the air of winning the press conference. We were talking about a different subject matter, a different coach, a different sport, different coach. But I think that she's gone beyond winning the press conference. So far, she's the type of person that I'd want McKenzie to play for.
I think so too. She seems to really care about the young ladies and wants them to grow as, you know, as people as well as lacrosse players. She's well connected, coming from Duke. She's got a nice background. I think she's going to be a really good recruiter. So I think the program is in good hands. I think they picked a lady that's really going to take the program on an upward swing over the next 3, 4, 5 years.
I'm very excited about that, and I wanted to ask you, we're recording this before, on the weekend before, we're supposed to know, hopefully, a basketball coach. What do you think so far? The basketball search has been like just about any other kind of coaching search. There's been a lot of roller coaster rides, and hopefully we'll find out a basketball coach here pretty soon for men's basketball.
Well, all we know for sure is Adolph Rupp decided not to take the job. Other than that, you know, we're still hearing Joe Dooley, hearing Bobby Lutz. You know, you hear so many things. I had heard that Bobby Lutz did not interview for the job, but then I heard he did interview for the job. I know that Bobby sent a video to, you know, people in the know that would have some something to do with the decision-making process about his career, a pre-produced, pretty slick video. I think Bobby Lutz would love to be the head coach at East Carolina. Joe Dooley's been here. He did a good job. We all know Joe left and why he left and what he's done at Kansas and at Florida Gulf Coast since then. You know, he's got a Rhode Island's in the mix. But East Carolina, really, as we sit here on Easter Sunday, ECU needs to get this done sooner than later. I mean, people are already out on the recruiting trail, and it's April 1st, and we don't have a basketball coach. So it needs to get done pretty quick.
That's right. We're getting ready to have the national championship game tomorrow night, and it's certainly going to be – we've got to have it done, because if we don't, not only that, but it creates a lot of – I think the last couple weeks there's been a lot of uncertainty when it comes to the basketball search. I'd heard that it would be Final Four weekend when it would be selected, and here we are, and it feels like, okay, what's going to go – what happens if Joe Dooley does take the Rhode Island job? We won't know until this week, but that would be that's the kind of situation it looks like it's Joe Dooley's job to have right now.
Well, you know, Lavelle Moulton was in the mix from NC Central. He decided to stay where he was. Seth Greenberg interviewed for the job. That would have been a splash wow hire, but I think he's going to stay at ESPN. So Joe Dooley, I think it's Joe's job to turn down. And if Joe decides to go elsewhere and not take the East Carolina job, I am perfectly okay with Bobby Lutz, what he did at Pfeiffer, what he did at Charlotte. He was an assistant with Mark Gottfried at NC State. Bobby Lutz has quite a pedigree. A lot of people are a little bit iffy on Bobby because he's a little older. I shouldn't think that should have anything to do with it. As long as he can X and O and recruit, that's what you have to do. At East Carolina, you have to go find the 2- and 3-star guys and make them, you know, perform and get an occasional 4-star if you're lucky. But you, if you come to East Carolina, you got to find those diamonds in the rough, and you got to recruit locally. You got to go to the local high schools, the South Centrals, the Conleys, the Farmvilles, the J.H. Roses. I think that's something that's been missing. We've had a lot of guys, good basketball players right here in our own backyard that have gotten away over the last several years, and I'd like to see some of those kids give ECU some consideration.
You look at Kyle Bowman from Havelock. He wanted to play here, and there's been a lot of stories back and forth. But he personally said he told Coach Lebo he wanted to play here, and then there's been speculation of whether that he didn't sign early enough and all that stuff. But Kyle Bowman was one that the Duke lost the very first game. He plays for Boston College, scored 30 points on Duke, and those kind of players we can't turn down.
There's a kid that graduated from Farmville a year or so ago named Tyler May. I think he wound up going maybe to VCU, but we just need to get a few. We don't have to get all these kids, but we need to get a few. A few of these kids need to stay home and play basketball, you know, in Eastern Carolina. A lot of, you know, like you and I, we love our mamas, and that's a big deal for kids that can get it done. There's a kid at Green Central, Demaje Dodd, right now. You know, what would it mean for East Carolina to grab him and keep him home? So there's a lot of talent here, and at least a percentage of it needs to stay here.
I agree with that because the very fact, when you think about Coach Montgomery, he has to get 25 guys every year. Basketball is usually 4, maybe 5, but usually 4 a year, and that's all you need. I know it sounds like all you need, but When you look at, even if you don't get the top guy at South Central, for example, they've got a lot of talent. What a great program at South Central, Farmville Central. I mean, you Kinston High School. There's so many great high schools in a, what I call a gas tank away that could, and you only need four guys. So even if you get the second best guy off their squad, you still could put a great team together.
Not to mention the JUCO route. Sometimes you have to make a quick fix. Look what Keats did at NC State this year with JUCOs. He was just filling some holes for a year or two, and they made the NCAA tournament. If you come to East Carolina, you got to be able to, the first thing is you got to get out and mingle with the fans and do all the Pirate Club stuff and hug the necks and kiss the babies and shake the hands and go to the barbecues. That you got to do that. That's just part of the job when you come to Eastern North Carolina as a coach. So you got to win the press conference, and then you got to do the X's and O's. And you also got to win the moms and dads, and that's what it's about.
Speaking of which, one of the best ones for me in the late after Joe Dooley is when Hamrick brought in Bill Herrien. I thought Bill Herrien did an excellent job of selling ECU basketball, considering it's very tough at a football school.
Remember Billville? They were camping out for tickets for Marquette or Louisville or whoever it was, and he brought the students pizza. Bill Herrien, he was one of those guys. If he saw you in a restaurant, he would come up and speak to you. And he was just he was perfect for East Carolina. Plus, he won games. He got the program some attention, beating some pretty heavy hitters. And there's no better atmosphere around here for basketball than when Williams Arena Menges Coliseum is full. You know, there's, what, 8,500 people. It's rocking the students. The Menges Maniacs are going at it. And that's what it's about. Remember when State came here in 2007 and East Carolina beat the Wolfpack in December of 07? That we were in there like sardines. And that was a great atmosphere. That was the best basketball atmosphere I've ever been at for an East Carolina game. We need to get that back because you know how fans are. If we're not winning, they're not coming. That's just the way people are. That is human nature. If your program is not winning, they're not showing up. I don't subscribe to that philosophy personally. I love the game whether we win or lose, but a lot of people are not going to come out if you don't have a good product on the floor.
Well, on the ice as well, you look, I love the Carolina Hurricanes. They were just eliminated again another year without making the playoffs. You can make it pro level. You can take college, high school. It could be even probably Babe Ruth on down the line. If you don't have a winning program, people are not going to pay their hard-earned money to come see the sport. It is what it is. And so you got to have a winner, right?
Well, look at Carolina, 2006 when they won the Stanley Cup. Everybody had Canes fever. You know, Raleigh, East, everything was Carolina Hurricanes, and they won the Stanley Cup. A hockey team in North Carolina won the Stanley Cup. But, you know, and it's hard not to make the playoffs in hockey. I think about half the teams make the playoffs. Carolina showed some improvement this year, and they were in the mix for a playoff spot right up to the end of the regular season. But you're right. It's got a great facility there, the RBC. Hurricanes have everything in place. They have all the ingredients for winning hockey. Now it's just time to get it done.
And we were talking about winning. Let's move on to, we hope we'll hear about the basketball. We need now at East Carolina a athletic director. Do you think Dave Hart is going to stay on beyond the interim? It's not interim status, but as a special counselor to the chancellor.
I think hiring Dave Hart to conduct the basketball search was a smart move. Dave lives in Knoxville. That's where all the interviews have been conducted. We know Dave's got, you know, still got ties here. He's an East Carolina guy at heart. He's well connected being at Florida State and other places. He knows everybody. He's been everywhere. I would love to see Dave Hart stay here and take that position. I personally don't think that's going to happen, but you and I were talking before we started this. We need an athletic director that's going to go out to all the Pirate Club functions, going to be visible, going to mingle with the fans, going to go to the barbecues and hug the necks and know all the names of the moms and dads, Pirate Club members and their kids and where they go to school and their grandkids. That's what it's all about. You got to get out among the public when you're the athletic director somewhere like East Carolina. It's all about the little things and how you conduct yourself in front of people and how you treat people. That's huge. You know, that's just huge.
It is. It's going to be interesting to see that. I'm moving on to football now. I know it's going to be a tough season, and you and I have been friends for a long time. And in fact, before we knew each other, we were Pirate fans. And of course, I went to ECU, and then right after I graduated, that's when I met you. And look at all the – when you think about – this is what I tell people. When you think about the 1980s. I was a member of the FCA, and that's when I went to my first game in junior high school under the Art Baker years of we're going after the best. Do you remember that? And so I've been.
And they went after the best, and they went, what, 2-9, 3-9? Yeah. Art Baker was a good football coach. Ed Emery left the cupboard slightly bare. Art Baker was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Art Baker was a good football coach, and he was a better person. You know, we didn't win a lot of games under Art Baker, 84, 85, 86, but he was a quality gentleman. He really was.
But you look at Bill Lewis, you've had Steve Logan, you've had John Thompson, you moved to Skip Holtz, and Ruffin McNeil, now Scotty Montgomery. But the program, when you think about where we were back in, when we were kids, and you can go, you've been here all your life. I haven't been here. I was a teenager when I started pulling for the Pirates at age 13. You've seen a lot of changes, and where do you want to see the program going?
Well, you got to be very, very careful. For some reason, in smaller school college athletics, the philosophy is we're doing pretty well, but I think we can do better. And about 8 times out of 10, that philosophy doesn't work, i.e. Steve Logan. They thought for some reason, you know, that was a personal deal between Logan and Mike Hamrick. They didn't get along or whatever. But we had Ruffin McNeil, and we, you know, Ruffin, you know, had some really good years here. He had some average years. After one of those average years, it was decided that we could do better. And that has not been the case, at least so far. Ruff was one of the – Ruff did everything off the field. He was a big teddy bear. Ruff was a guy. He was a hugger. He knew your name. He spoke to you. He went to all the Pirate Club functions and did the barbecues, and he was an ECU alum. So Ruff and McNeil was a perfect fit for East Carolina. Losing Ruff hurt a lot of people personally, and you can't take things like this personally. It's a business. Unfortunately, it's a business. It's a performance-based business. If you don't win consistently, you're not going to keep a job. The way the Ruffin thing was handled ruffled a lot of feathers. So you got to remember, Scotty Montgomery came into a pretty tough situation, a no-win situation his first year. But winning cures all, Dave. We know that if the football team had been 7-4 last year, you and I wouldn't be having this discussion about Jeff Confer and who the next athletic director is going to be. He would still be here.
That's exactly right. You look at the football school being East Carolina. I know other people said it, even the media, we used to joke about, oh man, we're going to go to this bowl, this.com, this tire bowl, whatever. Now you're looking at 2015, 2016, 2017, 3 straight years not going to a bowl, and potentially 4 if we don't do it this year. That's a long time without going to a bowl game.
It is a long time for a program of East Carolina's tradition and history not to go to a bowl, because all you have a winning record, you're going to a bowl. There are really too many bowls. Now, I think you're rewarded for mediocrity too much in college football. Now, you know, to me, 5-5-1 is not a bowl-worthy season. Or even 6-5 in some cases, but that's the way it is. It's all about money. Money drives the train. Coach Moe's got his work cut out for him this year. They've got a murderous schedule. I think they've got more talent than they had last year. But you and I were talking about the schedule before we started this, and you look up and down the schedule, and you don't see too many games that jump off the page at you that are winnable immediately.
Well, you look at you want to talk about the schedule. It looks, and we'll probably dissect it. You'll be on here several times before the season, I'm sure. But you look at the first game of the year, North Carolina A&T. Of course, Broadway retires. But that North Carolina A&T program, if you fall asleep at that kind of team, is the same way like James Madison. They won the historical black college. It's called the Celebration Bowl in Atlanta. Went 14-0, the best year they've ever had. And, of course, you know, every season's different. Who knows what happened to them? We have more talent than A&T. However, if you don't show up, that's one of those games that can be where you can lose that game. And that would be 0-1. And if you lose A&T, it's going to be downhill.
I like to think of us right now at this point in the season, Dave, as 1-0 because we won the purple goal game. ECU is 1-0 because ECU took that purple goal game. They got it done. But you're right, the schedule is tough, and I think we all know that this is a make-or-break year probably for Scotty Montgomery. And it's going to be a tough road to hoe. It really is. And I hope he can get it done. I'm pulling for him. I think there's some pieces in place. But if he's been told that this is the year you got to get it done, I still think the Pirates are probably a year away.
I think you're right. I think the situation is tough. When you said the reason that I felt bad, that I have felt bad for Montgomery, that I will say this, is when Ruffin McNeil was fired at December 4th, 2015, I remember that day very well. It's my grandmother's birthday. I said, man, whoever comes in here after this decision that's been made is going to have it's a tough situation, because it doesn't matter who it is after Ruff being fired, an alum, and the way it was handled and all that. Then that person's going to have a hard time winning here. And I hope that I'm wrong this year and that we can turn it around, right the ship.
Well, in Jeff Confer's defense, there is no soft, easy, warm, fuzzy way to fire anyone. When you get fired, you get fired. Could it have been handled better? Certainly it could have. But whoa, how do you fire someone and let them down gently? It's tough. That was not a fun day. Coach Mo came in, I think a very tough situation. And now we've got quarterback issues. And, you know, we lose another quarterback. We've got Holt Naylors, who's coming in as a freshman. We've got Effetti coming in. We've got some talent at quarterback, but it's awfully young and hadn't played a lot of snaps. So there's your deal. Your quarterback is kind of your quarterback. He's the head guy on the field, and it's all about his performance and lack of turnovers and things like that. We're good in the running back position. I think the defense is going to be better. We talked about that. But how is that quarterback position going to evolve is going to say a lot about East Carolina's success and how this upcoming football season goes.
Isn't it amazing when you have Shane Carden at the end of 2014, and then what was a week or two before the season started in 2015, Ben Kirk goes down, was ACL, I think, but it was a season-ending injury, and he hadn't even started yet. And we go 5-7 with two quarterbacks that were not really Division I quarterbacks, but you have a situation where it looks like from 2015, 2016, 2017, and maybe 2018, where the quarterback play it's like four straight seasons. There's no reason why that it's easy to, what I'm trying to say is easy to figure out why we're having trouble winning when we have question marks at quarterback every single year.
And I think there are way too many expectations placed on Holt Naylors already. Colton is a great athlete, a better young man, but he's a freshman. And to think he's going to come in here and be the savior of this program year one, I think that is very unfair. I think Holton needs a year of seasoning. It would not bother me if they redshirted Holton, you know, in a regular situation. But now they don't have the luxury of doing that because of what's going on. But Holton Ehlers is going to be a great quarterback. But to expect him to jump in here and be, you know, Joe Namath, Peyton Manning, and whoever rolled into one is just not going to happen.
I love his dad very much. Morgan Ehlers is a great guy. I've known him for about as long. I met you first, but I met him a few months later. Tremendous guy, tremendous family. He says all the right things. He knows he's a very bright kid. He's a great athlete in Holton. And I think that if they redshirt, I think the best thing to do is redshirt Ehlers. Unless you, at the very end of the season, you have to bring him in for because of injuries or whatever. But you have Effetti and Herring, and I think both of them are capable they're capable of coming in and doing a great job where because they've already been here, and you give a year or two for Ehlers, and then all of a sudden, if he's a redshirt sophomore starting or whatever, then I think that by then he would be tremendous.
Well, my personal opinion is Reed Herring, it is Reed's job. As we sit here today, I think Reed Herring is going to be the starting quarterback unless something goes haywire. And I think Holton will be the backup. That's just my personal opinion. To be so young at quarterback, that's tough. That is tough. But we've also, you got to look at the offensive line. I think the offensive line will be better this year. But they've got to be really good to protect these kids. That's what it's about. You know, a good offensive line can make an average quarterback look great. And that's what it comes down to. If you got a really good offensive line, you can win with an average quarterback. But if you got a quarterback who doesn't have time to throw and is running for his life, that's going to be a tough season. That's going to be hard.
It really is. I agree with you. I think that the I've said all along that if he can't, Scotty can't get it done this year, he's done a great job of recruiting, and whoever the next coach is, if that's the case, if it's going to be tough to win this year, to win six games. And I'm even hearing with a new athletic director, you never know, it might take seven games to save his job. Who knows? But I think if he at least wins six, he saves his job.
I hope so. I hope for his sake. I kind of hate it for him because I really think that, like I said earlier, they're a year away. If ECU could win five games this year, I think they'd be primed possibly for a breakout season in 2019. But has the die already been cast? Have they told him, you know, you gotta have a winning season, you gotta go to a bowl game to survive? I don't know. That's the word. I don't know that personally, but that's the word. So it's gonna be tough. But I just want to see him be competitive. You know, 4-7 wouldn't bother me as long as they're competitive, because they're playing some really, really good football teams. You look up and down the schedule, there's only a couple of games on that schedule as we sit here today that I would check off as wins.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, look at ESPN. They had an index a couple months ago where they look at past seasons, and there's various things that variables they use to come up with it. And I think that they only have us down for 2 or 3 wins for this coming season, and I hope that they're wrong. Last year, Vegas had us down at 2-5, and we won 3, so that's right at that. I haven't heard what they have us down for, the money guys in Vegas, but it'll be interesting to see what they say. But four wins, 5 wins, 6 wins, I mean, 6 wins, if you think about it, would be almost like going undefeated this coming year, looking at the schedule, the talent, the whole, et cetera.
But you got to remember, there are always a handful of teams every year that overachieve, that are expected to win 3 games and they win 6. Maybe East Carolina could do that this year. Let me tell you something. If Scotty Montgomery wins 6 games with this roster this year and this schedule, he's going to be American Coach of the Year. I mean, let's just face it. If he wins 6 games, I think if he wins 5 games, he's done enough to keep his job. That's just my humble opinion. But, you know, people aren't patient. It's what have you done for me lately? Win, 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 win. And you got all the message boards out there and the people that think they're experts on everything and they hide behind these handles online and don't give their real names when they're posting. Let's put it, if it was an easy job, we would all do it. A D1 football coach is a tough, tough job, especially in today's society, with the type of athlete you're dealing with, personalities, money, budget, ego. You got to be a jack of all trades when you're a head football coach. Not only is it about X's and O's, there's so many other things that factor into being successful or not being successful.
I want to ask you, being that I was talking about you and I have been around the program for, it felt like I was the young guy around the program.
You keep referring to how long I've been around the program, Dave.
I wanted to ask you, though, that what are things that you want to see for the program? I've been asking a lot of folks, and you and I, again, have known each other for over 20 years, seeing where we were as friends at the very beginning and now in the 90s, plot forward, look at how things have grown. What do you want to see? Like, for me, I want to see an indoor practice facility is for after the Southside project is going to be incredible for the stadium.
All the upgrades for the stadium are going to be great. Indoor practice facility is going to be great. I would like to see Pirate Nation. You know, there's been a lot going on in the athletic department over the last couple of years. There's been a lot going on. I would like to see – I told you this before we got started. I'm a little embarrassed by the behavior of some of the East Carolina fans and some of the things that have been written and said about Jeff Compher and others. You got to remember, Jeff Compher, whether you agree or disagree with him, he's got a family. He's got kids. He's got feelings. And some of the things that have been said about Compher, regardless of what you think of his practices, he's a human being. And I was very disappointed in the behavior of some of the fans. But winning cures all. And we talked about that earlier. We wouldn't be having this conversation if football was 7-4. I'd like to see Pirate Nation take a deep breath and realize, hey, I want to win. It's fun, but it's just football. In the grand scheme of life, it's not that big a deal. It's not that important. It's about family, life, death, and football is great. I love football, but it's not the alpha and the omega of life. And I think there are people that take it way too seriously.
I think something can be said of that. I think the one thing that when people, I think there's been a lot of ignoring That's the one thing for me. What I mean by that is if you see that a trend is going a certain way, get out in front of it. I think that was the one thing that I've been disappointed so far is that there, for example, I think that a lot of the things that Comfort did was good, like the Adidas deal was good. The lacrosse thing has been great. The Southside Project. But I think the narrative was created and created. And it's just because of social media message boards. We probably wouldn't have, back in the day, 20 years ago, when you and I were here and it was Mike Hamrick. Imagine if Mike Hamrick had been the athletic director when social media here 20 years ago, especially after firing Logan.
Social media is a great thing. The internet's a great thing, but it can also be a curse. Because, again, if you're that passionate, if you have such an opinion about what's going on, don't hide behind a screen name. Use your real name. Why not? If you're that passionate about what you're writing, use your real name. I do.
Not only that, but I'm doing a podcast right now so people can hear my opinions, whether they agree or disagree. I'm even doing a podcast about sports, and a lot of it is East Carolina because it's the local team for us here in the Greenville, North Carolina area. For sure. And if you wanted, hey, you can, you know what, we get the equipment, you can do your own podcast and put your own opinions out there, right?
That is the one of the good things about social media is with your podcast and all this stuff. Now you have a platform to be heard, you know, worldwide. There's somebody listening to your podcast right now that's living in another state or possibly another country. And that's the great thing about social media. I think people just need to think before they type. Sometimes that's my thing. Just stop and think about what you're about to type and think about it very carefully before you actually hit enter or hit send.
Well, let me say something on that too. The one thing that drives me crazy about Facebook is the fact, the great thing about Facebook is I get connected, stay connected with my friends like yourself. The bad thing about it is I don't want to hear what you ate last night, you had for dinner tonight. I really don't care that you got, that somebody clipped you off in traffic. Life happens. Things happen that are bad. Things that happen that are good, and that people put every single thing in their life. It's almost like a reality show for every single person out there that's your friend.
Some people are starved for attention, and the way you get attention is to put every little small, minute detail that happened to you every day on Facebook, good, bad, or indifferent. I'm like you. I use it to reconnect with friends. I like cat videos. I like watching sports. I like watching things on YouTube that I never thought I would see again, music, wrestling, whatever. But Facebook, it's another everything in moderation. That's what I believe. And Facebook's the same way. You and I both know people that when they wake up in the morning, they post, and every little thing that happens during the day, they post. And it gets a little obnoxious. But hey, if I've got a little bit more to do than to stay on Facebook all day. I don't know about you. But
you and I both have you and I both have a lot of side hustles that we're working on. And now I'm sure my wife loves the fact that I have a podcast where I'm doing interviews and extra time. But there's so many things I do during the day that I guess I wish I had more time for social media. How about you?
I'm fine where I am because now, you know, you're connected on your phone. You're always connected. Sometimes I disconnect. I don't turn my phone off per se, but sometimes I just like to turn it down. Social media is great, but everything in moderation. I like to just sit down sometimes and watch TV or thumb through a book. Or how about a conversation? How about just a one-on-one, me and you just having a conversation? You walk into a restaurant, and there's a married couple sitting across from each other, and 90% of the time they're both looking down at their phones, not paying any attention to each other whatsoever. And there's something, to me, in my opinion, there's something wrong with that.
Well, that's like my wife having young kids, and we have our stepson. He's actually almost 19, but the two kids, our young kids, it's hard for us to have a date night. So when we do go on a date night, I'm not looking at my phone. I'm spending a lot of time with her because that's a very precious, special time that we get to spend time together.
Yeah, well, you're still in the infancy of your marriage. How long have you been married?
Well, hopefully, if I can make it to June 22nd, it'll be 5 years.
5 years. It will be 23 years for me in December. So, big difference. But
as a matter of fact, I remember when you got married. I listened to you before I even became your friend on the radio.
I'm sorry that you had to go through that. July 30th will mark my 35th year in radio.
That's hard to believe. It's 22 coming up in July for me, and that's how I met you. And at Mix 94.3, July 1st, Al Cannon and gave me the job, and here we are now. So you can blame him and Henry Hinton for allowing me to.
1996.
July 1st, 1996.
I thought Mix 94.3, because 94.3 has been every format known to mankind since its inception in 1974. So.
Except for opera.
Oh, polka.
Yeah, that too.
Polka opera. But, hey, man, that's a whole nother subject when you start talking about radio and friendships. But, to be in radio as long as you and I have, you got to be a different breed. You got to enjoy being poor, first of all.
A lot of people, I was talking to someone today before you and I, before I came over here and we're doing this interview, and they were shocked. I explained to them about radio, that it's very, very difficult for people to, that's why we have the side hustles. That's the term I learned several years ago, because I was working at one point 80 hours a week to make a living.
Wow, that's a whole another topic for another day. The radio industry, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I still love it as much today as I ever did. It's changed. It's going to continue to change and evolve. And if you and I don't change and evolve with it, we won't be in it much longer. We're hanging on by a fingernail, man. I'm an analog guy in a digital world. There's no question about that.
That's right. With radio, and another thing too, is it's amazing to me. We could do a whole podcast, not only on radio, but how, this is one thing I would ask you, isn't it funny how radio, as far as when we grew up and all that with the technology of how many, like now with the TuneIn app and there's a podcast, and it's amazing. I was thinking about this last week about the fact that you and I and all the people in the 40-somethings, 50-somethings, maybe 60-somethings, a lot of people in that neighborhood that remember just the good old traditional radio, terrestrial radio, and now look at all the competition.
I think it's great. I think people have more ways to be heard. I think all the tune-in apps and the apps that you can listen to a radio station in Vermont, I think that's fantastic. If we could take the technology of today and marry that with the philosophies of yesterday, live, local, community service, a warm body in the building at all times, I think that could be a second golden age for radio. You take today's technology, and it's wonderful. I love it. And yesterday's philosophies of what radio is about, and put those two together, and I think you'd have a winner.
I was thinking about the very fact is that I can now, no matter where you are, you can keep up with all your teams. And that's amazing, because I remember when people – they're young listening to this podcast, they wasn't all the television, as far as television, not all the ball games were broadcasted back then. There was mostly on, that's why I love listening to games on radio, because as a little kid, I became conditioned to listen to baseball, basketball, football.
Many, many times, I'm a NASCAR guy, times in the 80s and 90s, I had to dial a phone number to find out how qualifying went. Who was on the pole? Where did my guy qualify? I would dial a phone number to find that out. First time I went on the internet in 1996 or 7 and looked up qualifying at a particular race, I was like, wow, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. So it's great to be connected. I enjoy it. I love it. But again, you need to take the philosophies of community service and live and local, and marry those with today's technology. That's just my opinion. I think you'd have a winner. What's happening today is technology is not assisting people in the radio business. It's replacing people in the radio business, and that's a problem.
I wanted to ask you, speaking of, you mentioned NASCAR, and you and I both love the sport. I want to say to, and I'm an employee of Southern National Motorsports Park. You are East Carolina.
I want to find out more about that. Are you announcing there now?
Yes, I am.
That's cool,
man. Yeah.
So you're working with Mike Diaz? Is that who's?
Yeah, and Charlie Hansen.
Yep. I do not know Charlie. I do know Mike. Congratulations. I did not know that you were with Southern National until you told me a few days ago. That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, you've been at East Carolina, and somebody, this is the true story I just told them yesterday. they're like, wait a minute, you drive from Williamston, North Carolina, that's where I live in my hometown, to right outside Kinley, the suburbs of Kinley, North Carolina, for a racetrack. Why don't you go to Robertsonville? You know what I told them? I said, Alan Vick is the announcer there at East Carolina, and it's kind of like a Supreme Court appointment. He's going to be there. He's probably going to be broadcasting there and die there.
Yeah, well, I'm starting my either 19th or 20th year this year. I can't remember exactly, but been there a long time. Love it. But talking about NASCAR, I don't know, man. NASCAR's got some problems. They do. And I'm not being, you know, old school fuddy-duddy, but if you just look in the stands, NASCAR's got some issues, and I don't know what the answer is, but I do know NASCAR's got some problems that they need to address.
Well, it seems like to me that, for example, that it's, you know, when we talk about, you were just talking about evolving in radio, okay? And I can make a nice segue for us, since we're having our great conversation here, with NASCAR, that a lot of the people that you and I grew up with, our relatives that went to NASCAR, the reason why we're involved in racing, those people have unfortunately passed on, and we haven't done a good job of getting the millennials. Everybody I talk to that says we need to definitely find a way, and that's the toughest part. How do you get the young folks? We're good at getting it's kind of like an old business model. We've been good at getting the older folks, and we were the young guys way back when, that the kids and the teenagers and the 20-somethings, we were a part of that, but a lot of the kids now are not coming up with the racing.
Well, the first thing about racing is it's today to actually go to a race with a family of four, you got to mortgage your house. It's very expensive. It used to be you could get a ticket and stay on the infield. You brought a camper and brought your food for the weekend, and you probably got away, you know, with souvenirs, with $150, $175. Today, that doesn't happen. You're looking at a family of four spending easily $400, $500, maybe $600 to attend a race. And a lot of people don't have that much disposable income. I don't know what the answer is. It's the economy is part of the problem. NASCAR has an identity problem now with people, because I hear people say it all the time, and I don't agree with this, but a lot of people say, well, when Earnhardt died, I lost interest. And I understand that. But what we've got now, there's too much white bread vanilla going on in NASCAR. They jump out of the car. They were just putting the wall, doing 180 miles an hour. They jump out, and first thing they do is wipe their brow and thank their sponsors. NASCAR needs a good old-fashioned feud, whether they want to admit it or not. That sells tickets. It does. It sells tickets. And right now, everybody's just all white bread, and they thank all the sponsors. They get out of the car, and they look like they've just been on a Sunday afternoon drive in the Pontiac. Remember when those old guys would get out of the car, Petty and Allison and Yarborough, they'd have oil and grease all over their face. And, you know, those were men driving race cars today. And also, you can't win on Sunday and buy on Monday anymore like you used to be able to. You used to could, if Bobby Allison won a race in a Buick Regal, you could go to your local Buick dealer the next day and buy that Buick if you wanted. Race cars are not stock cars anymore at all. There's nothing stock about a race car. So there's no more of that. And I think that's a disconnect as well with the average fan. Not being able to walk in the showroom and say, hey, Jimmy Johnson drives that car and I want it. I want a car just like Jimmy's.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I was talking to Mike Ray last. You know Mike Ray.
I know Mike Ray very well.
He was on and did an interview with me, and we were talking about, and I was talking about one of the things for NASCAR. You take a guy like Kyle Busch. A lot of people don't like him, but he's a great driver, and we need guys like that. I call them the bad boys. I like him personally. I don't have anything against him. I'm saying, but it's good to have the rivalries for it. You and I, everybody, it's great that you're friends or you do that, but it seems like everybody gets along, and there's no rivalries. It'd be like Duke and Carolina getting along.
Yeah. I want to for NASCAR to get back to the average Joe fan base. We need to go to a fight and have a race breakout. That's what needs.
Thank you, Rodney Dangerfield.
That's what needs to happen. And I don't mean that in a literal sense as much as I mean we need rivalries. Okay, tell me right now, two guys that's a big rivalry in NASCAR in 2018. Can you name me, we're five, six races in, name me something that's happened that has become a rivalry? A Petty Pearson, a Allison, a Waltrip, you know, whoever. Let's go to the 90s, a Mark Martin, an Earnhardt, a Rusty Wallace, a Dale Earnhardt. Can you name me two drivers that are constantly running up front and at each other's throats every week like they used to be?
I was going to say if I could, we have copyright infringement, I can't, but I'd play the Jeopardy theme right now because like it'd be like Final Jeopardy. I can't. I'm right now, I better not bet the house on it.
And NASCAR, when they got away from the short tracks, when they got away from the Wilkesboros and the Rockinghams, that kind of took it away from Joe Average. I realize you want to go into different markets and bigger markets, California, Texas, whatever, but when you get away from what built the sport, the grassroots of the sport, I think that really hurts. That's why Martinsville is still doing so well. It's a throwback to an era where you can go in there and get a ticket for $30 and buy a hot dog, and you're right on top of the action. I mean, you could go down in the pits after the race and see the cars or whatever. And at a lot of the tracks, the drivers and the cars are not as accessible as they used to be, and I think that's a problem.
You look at Bristol as another race that a lot of people will go to because of that very fact as well.
Yeah, Bristol has lost some of its luster. Back in the 90s, you had to know somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody to even get a ticket to Bristol. Oh, wow. And now you can walk up and get a ticket at Bristol. And I also think the cars are too equal. And when I say that, when everybody's running the same speed or within a tenth or a hundredth of the same speed, you can't pass anybody. And that's part of the problem, too. NASCAR, you hate to say cheating, but these guys that could find a quote-unquote competitive advantage in a motor or in a setup of a race car, now they fine them $50,000, suspend them for four races for, a pound and a half of too much right side weight. And that's part of it. It's gaining an advantage. It's being smarter than your competitor and being able to do that. Your Junior Johnsons, your Smokey Unics, your Gary Nelsons back that could find a way to get that little bit of an advantage to get that extra tenth of a second on the competition, and that's what made the difference.
Another sport that I want to do, because I know we're running out of time, but we got a little bit of time left, is wrestling. You and I grew up way back, and that was one of the first things you and I talked about way back when we were first friends, is wrestling. And I found out wrestling and racing, there were two things that most people...
The two R's.
Yeah, two of the R's. The and rock and roll, too.
The two R's. It's wrestling, by the way. Yep, I've been a wrestling fan since I was, can remember, probably 1970. 71, first time I remember. I love it. I still watch it, the product today. My favorite product of today, and we'll go backwards, I don't know if you've seen it, is New Japan Pro Wrestling. I love New Japan Pro Wrestling because there's not the storylines and the out-of-the-ring stuff. It is just in-ring, physical, catch-as-catch-can. You know, you do a move, I'll do a counter move. You really need to check out New Japan Pro Wrestling on Access TV because it's a throwback to some of the in-ring action that you and I grew up watching when we were younger.
One of my idols, hopefully we can have on the show, is Jim Ross. And JR is doing, I know, the voiceovers for that once a month. And if we get a chance, if he ever listens to us, I hope to have him on because he's one of my favorites.
Oh, Jim is a legend. And Jim Ross and Josh Barnett do a great job in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And again, it's just a lot of the characters I don't know, a lot of the guys I'm learning. But if you like just good in-ring, high-flying physicality of wrestling back in like the old NWA days, New Japan Pro Wrestling is a good product, a very good product.
If you get a chance, and I'm on a podcast, but I love the Jim Cornette Experience. I don't know if you've heard that. The drive through. I'm a huge, that's another person I want on the podcast, and I'm saying this right now, so hopefully he'll hear it, and I'm going to send him and Brian Less. Love them.
When you talk about managers and wrestling minds, the two guys that come to mind for me are Bobby Heenan and Jim Cornette. And Gary Hart's a close third. Jim Cornette has a great mind for the business. He's quick-witted. He's intelligent. He's smart. He's funny. You know, it's not always G-rated, but he's got something to say. And 9 times out of 10, I agree with everything he says.
He's amazing. So, Jim, if you're listening, Brian, if you're listening, we want you on the show for sure. The reason I brought up wrestling is we've got WrestleMania coming up. That is the big daddy of them all. I think all the way back to me, the first event that I remember being as a kid was Starrcade. It was huge. And, you know, all these pay-per-views. Now that what's amazing is you have the WWE Network for $9.99 a month. If you're a wrestling fan, you've got to get it because to me, I've really enjoyed looking at the old footage, and there's a lot of stuff up there, new programming. They've got all the pay-per-views. My God, I used to pay $50 to $60 a pay-per-view, and now I've got it right there for $9.99 a month. The WWE Network has got it going on.
I like the WWE Network, and I'm also a big YouTube fan. Who would have ever thought that I could type in Roddy Piper face turn, Georgia, 1982, and see that again?
Yeah,
that's incredible. And that's the thing, too. You know, two of my favorite wrestlers of all time died within 3 months of each other. Dusty Rhodes died in May of 2015. Roddy Piper died in July of 2015. You know, it's time, and there's nothing we can do about it. Time marches on, but it's tough to watch your heroes get old and pass away.
I was very shocked about Dusty Roddy Piper. Both of them were two of my favorites. I tell you what, the thing about today that I would say, and if Vince McMahon, he's not listening, but if he were listening, I wish that we could have the charisma of those guys from yesteryear. The talent as far as the in-ring, as far as the athleticism is tremendous. But I think I talk with friends all the time. I'm a huge fan of Ric Flair as well. But those guys back in the day when we were growing up, it sounds like we're old men, but we're not. Those guys could really talk, man. They could do a promo better than anybody.
Well, you talk about great promo guys. You talk about Dusty Rhodes. You talk about Roddy Piper. You talk about Ole Anderson, one of my favorite promo guys, because he was just a straightforward. And that's something that's missing with a majority of the guys, is the ability to talk. There's some guys that do some really good promos. The WWE is kind of getting a nice shot in the arm now that Daniel Bryan has been cleared to get back in the ring. Because all the guys that I really like a lot, a lot of the guys are no longer with the company. The CM Punks of the world, the DiBiase kid, I thought he was a great talent. He's gone. Alberto Del Rio. I liked Alberto Del Rio. He's gone. So a lot of these guys are doing different things. But where do you draw the line? The WWE or WWF back then and WCW or NWA were after two different audiences. WWE with Hulkamania and Macho Man and all that, they were after the kids. If you get the kids, the parents will bring the kids to the matches. Whereas the NWA was geared more towards the adult audience, the southern, you know, white male, four horsemen adult audience. I don't know where wrestling is going, and it's like a magician. Once we started learning all the tricks, and we know all the terminology now because of the internet, and we know that we always knew it was choreographed, but we didn't know all the tricks. Once the magician started telling you all the ways he does his tricks, it loses some of its luster.
That's a very good point. You know, with this past week's episode, speaking of Jim Cornette, when he had David Schultz on, I hadn't thought about David Schultz, Dr. in like, since that happened with John Stossel. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you need to buy his book. I think it's called Don't Call Me Fake. And it's a new book. I can't wait to read it. But back in the day, they were able to sell not only themselves the gimmick, but they were able to sell the sport. And the way you sell the sport is just like we were saying. You don't, you know that old thing when they say if you knew what was in a hot dog, then you probably wouldn't eat a hot dog. Well, we just take it at face value. It's a hot dog. Well, I guess it's the same. That's another analogy to use. You want to make sure that people keep eating hot dogs. And if you don't, if you tell them what's in the hot dog, they may not eat the hot dog.
Johnny Valentine, Greg's dad, once said, I can't make them believe wrestling is real, but I can sure as hell make them believe I'm real. And that's what it's all about. You know, we felt Dusty Rhodes because Dusty was, even though we knew that it was Virgil Runnels behind the camera writing the stories, doing a lot of the production, it was we felt Dusty Rhodes. He was the common man. He was the son of a plumber. We felt Ric Flair because we all wanted to be a kiss-stealing, wheeling-dealing, jet-flying son of a gun, even though that was very unattainable. We didn't know who Richard Flair was, but we knew who Ric Flair was. With Piper, don't you want to be Roddy Piper just running around saying whatever you want to say when you want to say it and being tough enough to back it up? And we didn't, and the product back then was the storylines were believable. Today you see them, but when you know when they're walking backstage, somebody's going to get jumped. You know, and back in the day, I think they took more time to write more believable stories. And the characters were just more believable, and they gave them more time to develop characters back in the days. But look at The Rock. When he was Rocky Maivia 15 years ago, people laughed at him. The character was awful. When he found his character, when he found The Rock, he became one of the biggest stars in the business. Same way with Flair. Flair's first 4 or 5 years when he was a Richard Flair, he was a nobody. But when he figured out the woo and the kiss stealing, wheeling, dealing, that's when, after the airplane crash in 75, that's when Richard Flair became Ric Flair.
See, that was right. I'm at the 77, 78 is when I came on the scene. This is a true story. I don't think I've ever told you this. My parents didn't know until probably 10, 15 years ago about this. But my grandfather, my dad's dad, was one of the most serious people, sweet person, you know, you could ever meet. He was very quiet for the most part. He would talk to you a lot. But he would be the last person you would think that would watch pro wrestling. And Saturday nights, when we would stay over there, he would let us stay up on Saturday. We thought we were somebody to stay up after the news to watch Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling with Bob Cottle. And I think the one thing that I will say is back then that was really cool was the fact that it was taped at WRL on Wednesday nights, and that's in a small studio. And, you know, yeah, there was not really a lot of glamour, but I think because they didn't have all the glamour, they had to come up with their characters, their gimmicks had to be strong. The product, as far as the television product, is not as good as it used to, you know, I mean, it's better now than it was then, but the technology seems like that's progressed, but yet they left behind a lot of the charisma and the charm and all. That's probably what made the sports, what I'm trying to say.
Well, everybody knew who Bob Cottle was from being the weatherman at Channel 5 before he ever started doing wrestling. But you're right, because you were right on top of the ring in that studio. It held maybe 200 people, if you're lucky. It gave you a sense. And after the matches, all the wrestlers would go to the Hilton Underground in Raleigh and have a drink or two. So if you were a fan, if you knew that, you go to the Hilton Underground in Raleigh and follow, you know, Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson and Lex Luger and all those guys and go have a beer with them after that. I think we're missing that. They were more accessible, you know, and they would come to your town. And I remember Rocky Mount, Greenville, Wilts, and all holding wrestling matches. And you talk about people that you wouldn't think would be wrestling fans. My dad's mother lived in a little town called Totty, North Carolina. It's between Farmville and Fountain. And at the time, she was probably 65 or 70 years old. She loved it. She ate it up like candy. And if the bad guy did something she didn't like, she would let you know about it. I mean, you'd see these old ladies in the front row. They would throw bottles. They would spit on the wrestlers. I mean, these were sweet little old ladies that turned into animals at wrestling. My grandmother for years thought the moon landing was fake, but wrestling was real. I'm just gonna tell you right now. She swore we didn't land a man on the moon, but that Ricky Steamboat was going to whip Ric Flair's butt, you know, at Dorton Arena on Wednesday night.
That's a funny story you brought up, and I want to talk to Jim Cornette. It was late June of 1987. They come to the Old Rose High School, and I swear to you, my dad bought my sister and I. We were huge into wrestling. I still love wrestling, but really big into wrestling when we were teenagers, right? So I'm sitting probably the second or third row from ringside, right there near ringside, and the tickets were dirt cheap in the gymnasium, in the gym. And there comes Jim Cornette. It was the Midnight Express versus the Rock and Roll Express. Mm-hmm. Two of the great tag teams of all time. And Jim Cornette comes by, and I swear I want to see if that lady was planted. It was an old grandma right there at the aisle, and she was right near the front row of the ring. She took a pocketbook and was hitting Jim Cornette with it. And I've always wondered, is that real or is it not real?
No, I mean, they had to have security coming down to the ring many times. And Jim got, a lot of those guys got hurt. Ole Anderson got stabbed in Columbia, South Carolina, or somewhere one time. Roddy got stabbed legitimately. People take it too far. But most of the time, as a fan, you didn't want to mess with a wrestler because they couldn't do anything to you in the arena. But if they ever saw you outside the arena, they were pretty – most of those guys are legitimately tough guys. But Cornette, you know, he was a photographer for Pro Wrestling Illustrated and the Wrestler magazine and a few of the others before he actually became a manager in the sport.
Tell you a quick story. We got to get out of here. My wife, we were engaged at the time, and we took some of the folks, the family members, to the wrestling in Greenville, to WWE in 2013, in February that year. And I looked at her and I said, "This is not real." She said, "Please stop saying that. We're not going to get out of here alive." Those folks were so into it. But anyway, what a great time. We're out of time, my friend. I can't believe we've talked a whole hour. I just looked down and lost track. But you're so much fun, and we want to have you on from time to time to get your thoughts on. We had various topics, life, sports, or whatever. Appreciate you coming on today.
We haven't even talked about, you know, some of the. We haven't talked about the NFL. Yeah. We haven't. Well, there's a lot of subjects we haven't discussed because you and I know a whole lot about much of nothing. So that's why we can talk for an hour.
Yeah, well, you're a radio guy. I'm a radio guy. We were born. I was telling somebody earlier today that I never got in trouble at school except for talking because my voice projected so even my whisper is loud.
Yep, you and I were born to do radio. There was no question what I was born to do was radio. And 35 years later, I still love it, but we got to get back to live and local and real human beings in radio stations being disc jockeys and entertaining the public and get away from all this automated, consultant-driven, I could say the word, but I don't want to be on your podcast. We've got to get back to today's technology and yesterday's philosophy.
My friend Ali Beg, thank you so much. You're one of the first to come on, and hopefully you'll come on many times in the future for the Sports Objective Podcast.
Before we go, what is the fee for doing this podcast?
Yeah. Well,
I'm a famous radio personality. I don't do anything for nothing.
Well, how about if I buy you dinner?
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. I'm just kidding you, man. I'll do this anytime. I work in radio, so I work for free most of my life. But this has been fun, Dave. Congratulations on your new podcast and getting this done. And I'm willing to come on and be a part of this pretty much anytime. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. And we'll have you on soon.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective. And the objective is sports.